All right.
Up to your expectations, neither are you here to live up to mine. Yeah, I don't owe no one, no obligation, no one owe me none, so everything is fine. I said,
during the few moments that we have left, we want to have just an off-the-cuff chat between you and me, us. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Sorry about that. Got pulled away from my desk for a brief second. Welcome to another episode of Real Life Radio Show. I am your host, Jimmy Capra, alongside my co-host, Brother Roz. Today is Thursday, I guess it's still technically morning. Man.
Yeah.
We haven't done a show at this hour ever, I don't believe. Circumstances permitted. Hopefully this is reaching you at a point in the day where either you're having a great day or you have just tuned in to something that will change the trajectory of your day. So hopefully that's what we can do for you this morning and every Tuesday evening when we come on. Brother Roz, I know you was adamant about getting this off of your chest. So we shall start. Matter of fact, I have a few things that I want to go over real quick. But
yeah,
what I will
and I have
do,
some clips to play too.
Yeah, what I will do is we will... Okay, sorry, I had a brain fart like that. What we will do is that we will go with the things that you wanted to touch on first.
Okay.
And actually, let me go through, because these are just topics okay. that I believe we should always keep in the back of our minds. So let me pull this up real quick, and I just want to go over a few quick headlines. First thing that I wanted to go over was this comes from the new gutfix.com. Now, this was last year when it was published, May the 25th, 2018. But this has been a reoccurring question that I have been getting, whether we're talking about direct messages, text messages, or just here in Chattanooga, where I'm from, just these type of questions. And this has everything to do with GI problems, gastrointestines. I believe that's how you say it. But let me go ahead and read this article real quick. And once again, this comes from the newgutfix.com. Diet experts tells all. It's like a power wash for your insides. Millions of Americans suffer low energy, digestive discomfort, and trouble losing weight. Many also experience achy muscles and joints, skin problems, headaches, and even frequent colds. If you're experiencing any of these health issues, the real problem may be leaky gut, says Dr. Stephen Grundy. According to Dr. Grundy, who has studied leaky gut for over 20 years, certain food can cause tears in our gut lining. That's an interesting descriptive term. This in turn allows toxins to enter our bodies that lead to digestive discomfort, food cravings, fatigue, weight gain, and even more health issues. Unfortunately, by simply stopping leaky gut, Grundy has seen thousands of people reduce and even reverse these troubling conditions. Dr. Grundy himself lost 70 pounds after fixing his own leaky gut and has kept the weight off for over 20 years. It's easy. You just need to know what foods to avoid. He recently told a crowd of over 1,000 people while speaking with world-famous self-help guru Tony Robbins, suspected racist, excuse me. He's also his most well-known patient. Now, for the first time ever, Dr. Grundy has created a short video where he explains everything about leaky gut, including how people can naturally fix it on their own right from home. The video is presented below by Dr. Grundy, and I will attempt to play this now.
No it doesn't matter that 20 doctors have told you it's all in your head. I got news for you. It's actually all in your gut.
Cardiologist Stephen Gundry says he solved the weight loss mystery.
You really have changed the way I think about what I eat.
Best book I've seen on diet ever.
You did all this research. You were 70 pounds heavier. What did you change? What did you stop eating? What did you start eating?
So I used to be 70 pounds overweight, and I was running 30 miles a week. I was going to the gym 1 hour every day and eating a healthy, low-fat vegetarian diet. And no matter what I did, I couldn't lose weight.
Then Dr. Gundry discovered a remarkable scientific breakthrough that changed everything.
I attribute almost all of my weight loss to the addition of one thing that I did to my diet.
Tell me if this sounds familiar. When you were a kid, you had tons of energy. You rarely experienced digestive pain, and you could eat whatever you wanted without gaining fat. But as you've gotten older, it feels like something in your body has changed. You may experience digestive issues like bloating or constipation, cravings for sugar and carbs,
skin rashes, breakouts, or redness, poor immune system, frequent colds, headaches and brain fog,
excessive fatigue, weight gain, especially around the belly, and low mood or feeling like you're in a funk. And if you've talked to your doctor about it, they probably told you there's nothing actually wrong with you. Oh, they may suggest cutting back on fast food or exercising more. But what if I told you it was all lies? What if I told you there was something wrong inside you? And even more shocking, that it's not your fault. My name is Dr. Stephen Gundry, and I've made this brand new video presentation for two reasons. First, to tell you that you, like me, may be suffering from what researchers are now calling leaky gut, a problem lurking deep inside you
that could be the root cause of your low energy, digestive discomfort, brain fog, food cravings, weight gain, and even skin issues.
And the second reason I made this video
is to tell you how you can fix it. Because there's not only hope for a solution, there's now clinical research proving this dangerous condition is real, and even better, a method to stop it for good. That means dramatically improved energy, fewer food cravings, inches vanishing from your waistline, the end of digestive discomfort, and best of all, restoring the healthy body you used to have, both inside and out. I've seen this incredible transformation in thousands, yes, thousands of people who have all regained their health in ways they never thought was possible. But the first person I tried this simple solution on was me. You see, for decades, I thought I was doing everything right. I was eating a healthy diet. After all, I'm a heart surgeon. I rarely ate fast food. I consumed low-fat dairy and whole grains. I ran 30 miles a week and worked out at the gym daily. Despite all this, I was 70 pounds overweight, with high blood pressure, migraine headaches, arthritis, high cholesterol, and insulin resistance. I kept asking myself, if I'm doing everything right, why is this happening to me? If you're watching this video, you too probably know that something isn't right, but you don't know what. Maybe you simply can't take control of your raging appetite or cravings for certain foods. Low carb, low fat, paleo, low glycemic, and the other diets haven't helped and weren't sustainable. Or after initial success, the lost weight quickly came back. The same goes for jogging, speed walking, weight training, aerobics, CrossFit, yoga, spinning, or whichever exercise program you've tried to get rid of those stubborn pounds, only to see them not work out in the end. If this sounds familiar, I wouldn't be surprised if you've also been dealing with the frustration of digestive issues, headaches, aching joints, or morning stiffness. Some people also experience adult acne, brain fog, or a major lack of energy or a host of other conditions you just can't shake. You may feel that somehow you're at fault for your poor health or your excess pounds, making you feel guilty or even ashamed. If it's any comfort, you're not alone. And I'm here to tell you, it is not your fault. And all those annoying symptoms are about to change. I'm going to tell you exactly what's been going wrong inside you. It's something almost nobody is aware of yet. Not even a room full of doctors I was invited to speak to at Harvard. I'll tell you this story in a minute. And you're not going to believe how unaware some of these so-called Ivy League folks really are. I'm also going to tell you how I've helped thousands of people deal with these very same issues you've been suffering from. I want you to feel what they feel. The end of painful digestive issues. the end of uncontrollable food cravings that lead to weight gain. All those unexplained skin, mood, and health issues vanishing in a matter of weeks. And best of all, I want you to be brimming with energy again, the kind of energy you had when you were young, and the kind of energy my patients and I have found once again, even at age 60 and beyond. But first, repeat after me. I am not to blame. That's right. These problems are not your fault. There is a solution to what ails you, but please prepare to have all your assumptions about what you thought was healthy turned on their head. In fact, some of what I'm about to tell you is going to fly directly in the face of what many doctors believe. So how can I be so certain about this issue plaguing millions of Americans and the simple, proven way you can fix it? Well, let me tell you about my medical background and how I discovered this shocking health solution, one that most doctors are completely in the dark about. Again, my name is Dr. Stephen Gundry, and I'm a cardiothoracic surgeon and celebrated nutritionist living in Palm Springs in Santa Barbara, California. I graduated with honors from Yale University and received my medical doctorate from the Medical College of Georgia. I spent 16 years as a professor of surgery and pediatrics and chairman of cardiothoracic surgery at the world-famous Loma Linda University School of Medicine. Along with my former partner, Leonard Bailey, I perform more infant and pediatric heart transplants than any other doctor in the world. I'm the inventor of the Gundry Retrograde Cardioplegia Cannula, one of the most widely used devices to keep the human heart alive during open-heart surgery. I was one of the original 20 surgeons who tested the world's first artificial heart and one of the first to use robots in surgery. I've seen thousands of patients with a spectrum of health issues, including cardiovascular disease, cancer, autoimmune conditions, diabetes, and obesity. But you may know me better from my appearances on shows such as Dr. Oz or interviews on news channels across America, or my online videos on health and wellness, which have over 50 million views. And according to my colleagues, this video is my most important video to date. I'm also the personal physician for legendary self-help guru Tony Robbins, who was kind enough to recently say, "Dr. Gundry is one of America's greatest and most knowledgeable physicians, and for years I've had the good fortune to benefit from his care." Why do Tony Robbins, Fortune 500 executives, and thousands of other Americans come to me for help? The answer is simple, because I'm willing to tackle medical issues that nobody else can fix. People come to me when they've been everywhere, Harvard, the Mayo Clinic, Princeton, UCLA, and they still can't find answers, because I'm not afraid to try solutions that go against the grain. In fact, in my experience, many health professionals are often behind on the latest research and in some cases actually doing more harm than good. And that's why, after 16 years as chief of heart surgery, I left my position at Loma Linda University School of Medicine. Why did I do it? Why would a successful doctor leave a prestigious career and turn his back on conventional medicine? Well, the reason may shock you. I realized that much of what I had learned, much of what we were telling patients, was flat out wrong. Specifically, my research showed that many of the conditions I was treating, weight gain, poor circulation, deteriorating health, heart issues, even mental decline, they were all starting in a place nobody was talking about, the gut. At first, it seems hard to believe that some, if not most, of the health issues we experience start in our digestive tract, and it can be fixed there too. But take it from me, someone who has now spent decades researching, studying, and testing solutions in this field, most health problems you face in life can be traced back to your gut. And if you suffer from digestive issues, fatigue, skin problems, aching in joints, low mood, headaches and brain fog, or just a feeling that you're in a funk, but you're not sure why, you may be suffering from what I and other researchers now refer to as leaky gut. Now you're probably wondering, what is leaky gut? How are all these different health issues related? And what do they have to do with my digestive tract? Well, get ready, because I'm about to explain everything. Leaky gut is a term used to describe a simple problem with a devastating result, that the lining of your digestive tract may be leaking, allowing dangerous toxins to sneak into your body and wreak havoc on virtually every aspect of your health. Here's a simple way to understand leaky gut. When you eat some delicious food, it travels through your body along your digestive tract. Along the way, that food gets broken down in your stomach, and the good stuff gets absorbed into your system to provide you with nutrients and energy you need to survive. And the bad stuff, the junk like bacteria, toxins, and things that are dangerous to you, get processed and, well, you get rid of them when you go to the bathroom. It's our body's beautiful, natural system for making sure you get the most out of food while easily and efficiently getting rid of the bad stuff. And for the most part, your body is designed pretty well. But here's the problem. Your digestive tract is very long. Amazingly, if you could take it out and look at it, your GI tract would have the same square footage as an entire tennis court. And yet, despite being this large, it's very thin. In fact, the lining of your digestive tract is only one cell thick. It's the thinnest thing that you can imagine. Now, here's what's cool about your body. Even though the lining of your digestive tract is razor thin, these cells are really tough. You can think of them like a line of Secret Service agents, locking arms, making sure nobody bad can break through your gut wall. And for the most part, nobody does break through. But here's the bad part. Thanks to new research by myself and others, we now know there's one dangerous thing that not only can break through, it's actually really good at destroying your gut lining. They're called lectins. If you've seen my other videos, you may have heard me discuss lectins before. But I have new information on lectins that's sending shockwaves through the medical community, which is why this is the most important video I've ever made. You see, lectins are tiny little proteins found in certain kinds of foods that are not supposed to be in your body. One famous type of lectin you may have heard of is gluten, but that's just one type. There's actually many found in various plants. Some common foods containing lectins are whole grain wheat, eggplants, and tomatoes. Many people have been told these are health foods, but in my opinion, they are anything but, because your ancestors didn't eat any of these so-called health foods. You see, tomatoes and eggplants weren't introduced to Western civilization until 1492, when Christopher Columbus discovered them in the New World and brought them back to Europe. Of course, he had no idea that they were packed with lectins, or the impact that they could have on human GI tracts, which had never been exposed to these foreign foods before. In the case of whole grain wheat, humans have been eating it for a while longer, since farming began about 10,000 years ago. But even then, most societies historically removed the dark wheat husk and instead ate white bread, which is not a coincidence, because it's in the dark husk that gut-destroying lectins are contained. However, since about 1950, the use of whole wheat health foods have skyrocketed in our society, as well as other lectin-rich foods. Do you know what else has happened since 1950? The obesity rate has more than tripled. The diabetes rate has skyrocketed 800%. An astounding 70% of Americans are now considered overweight or obese. And I was one of them. As a heart surgeon, I simply couldn't get my mind around it. How could Americans, with the best medical technology in the world, the richest economy, a gym on every corner, and an abundance of health foods on every grocery store aisle, be this sick and getting worse every year? Well, believe me, there is an answer. And there is a way to lose that weight, restore your energy, and fix the nagging health problems that are robbing you of your joy. A way to look and feel fantastic again, the way you should. And it all starts with these lectins. You see, the nasty little lectins in these foods are experts at breaking the interlocked arms of those Secret Service cells in your gut. And when they break those cells protecting your gut wall, they don't just bust through your digestive tract. They leave a hole in the protective gut lining, meaning other bad stuff can now get through too. This, in short, is what we call leaky gut, lectins making holes in your digestive lining. And I wish I could say that that's where it ends. But actually, it's only the beginning of the problem. You see, once you've got leaky gut, other bad guys can storm through your weakened gut lining too. And the worst of these bad guys are what we call lipopolysaccharides, also known as endotoxins. Endotoxins are little pieces of bacteria. This is going to sound gross, but you need to hear this. On a chemical level, they're actually microscopic pieces of poop. There are about 5 pounds of them in your gut, and the Secret Service agents in your cells are supposed to keep them out. But once you've got leaky gut, these endotoxins see the hole and barge through it. And when they do, watch out. These endotoxins storm across your entire body like an invading horde. If these endotoxins get into your joints, they can cause aches and pain. If they get into your skin, they can cause itchiness, redness, acne, and rashes. If they get into your upper GI tract, they can cause heartburn and indigestion. If they get into your blood, they can even cause septic shock. If they get into your heart tissues, they can cause the kind of deadly health issues I've spent my entire career trying to prevent, including heart disease and even death. And do you know the worst part? To your brain, all these terrible things are perceived as attacks on your body, the same as if you have a virus. So your brain goes on high alert to threat level red to stop these attacks, sending healing cells to fix the problem, which you can do for a while. But your brain just can't stay on threat level red all day, every day. Pretty soon, the cells that protect your brain from endotoxins start to wear down. And when these glial cells in your brain are strained too hard, they actually cause your brain cells to die. I probably don't have to tell you what happens when brain cells start to die. Headaches, brain fog, and losing your mental sharpness are just the first signs of damage. But if these toxins are left to rampage through your body for months or even years, the damage can be far, far worse. If the thought of these health issues keep you up at night, believe me, I'm right there with you. So, you can see why I now say leaky gut isn't just some small issue that causes digestive discomfort. It may actually be a root cause of many, many of the issues that plague us, both physical and mental. And it all comes down to these evil, vicious endotoxins sneaking through your gut lining and wreaking havoc on your entire body. This is the shocking breakthrough that first made me realize my career was about to take a major turn. And once I realized what was really causing the problems I was seeing in so many people, I knew I had a new mission in life. Not to continue performing heart transplants and coronary bypass surgery, which is very important work, but really just a last resort, and an extremely painful and expensive option at that. No, I realized I could do the most good as a doctor if I could help people before they got to that point, by tackling their health problems where they start, in the gut. That's why I left Loma Linda University Medical Center and founded the Center for Restorative Medicine in Palm Springs, California. We took people that couldn't find answers to their unexplained issues anywhere else. Many of them were almost out of hope, but I took them. And together, we began changing lives. Based on my new theory that many of these issues originated in the gut and that it was in the gut we must fight them, I began to see incredible changes in people suffering from leaky gut. Elena J. was 67 years old and had suffered from severe heartburn most of her adult life. She also experienced constant belly aches, weakness, and fatigue, and had a low protein level. A biopsy revealed she had lesions on her esophagus. After starting my program, her heartburn vanished almost immediately, and her stomach stopped hurting. When she had her esophagus scoped the next year, the damage had been completely 100% reversed. 76-year-old Jennifer Yu came to me suffering from chronic achy joints and elevated immune activation markers. She could barely make a fist, let alone walk, without her joints crying out in pain. After trying my simple program, the achy joints and flare-ups were gone, not in years or months, but in a matter of weeks. And perhaps the biggest changes people saw were with weight loss. My most famous success story was someone you may have heard of, world-famous singer and songwriter and host of The Voice, Usher. Usher is also an actor, and he needed help losing weight when he was cast to play boxing legend Sugar Ray Leonard. This is a true story. When Usher met the actual Sugar Ray in person, the boxer told Usher he was too fat to play him, even though Usher had only 7% body fat. But when a legend speaks, you listen. And so Usher tried everything, paleo diet, gluten-free, even a raw vegan diet. He also worked out 6 hours a day. Nothing helped him lose weight. He was so frustrated he nearly gave up. What happened next? Usher adapted my diet and quickly and easily lost 15 pounds. Usher became Sugar Ray. And when he appeared on the entertainment news show Extra and the host asked how he looked so fantastic, here's what he said. I had this very specific diet, Dr. Gundry's diet. You haven't seen it or heard about it yet, but it's an incredible regimen that really helped me shed weight and was also just really great for living. You are what you eat, so I had to do what I had to do, and now I'm in a good place. Usher is just one of thousands of people who have now adopted my program to astounding success, finally achieving the weight, energy, and health that eluded them for so long. This includes people of all weight types, from people trying to lose a large amount of weight to get their health under control, to folks who are just having trouble getting rid of those last few stubborn pounds of belly fat. Soon, we had so many people coming to us for help that we opened a second center in Santa Barbara, California. And what exactly was I doing to restore these people's health? Well, here's the basics. I simply stopped using all the medical techniques that had failed and relied on a natural, proven system that helped the body function the way it is meant to. I had people stop eating foods that were disrupting their digestive tract and causing leaky gut. For the most part, these are foods that our ancestors never ate, such as whole grains, beans, and other foods that contain tons of lectins. Amazingly, many of these foods are touted as healthy, when in fact they are actually wreaking havoc inside your gut. I also have people stop taking non-prescription OTC medications containing chemicals that destroy their gut lining, including antacids, painkillers, and all those over-the-counter anti-inflammatories. These things might help out for an hour or two, but they also make those holes in your gut bigger, leading to even worse symptoms of fatigue, indigestion, constipation, headaches, body aches, and the other symptoms of leaky gut. Incredibly, I could see the exact effects this program had on people because I tested their blood every 3 months for the entire time they were under my care. Using the most advanced testing methods available, I tested every single person for 12 separate markers of immune system activation, essentially to see if these endotoxins were putting their bodies on high alert. If your doctor hasn't given you this test, don't be upset with them. I'm one of only a handful of doctors in the country allowed to run these expensive tests at the top labs in the world, the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic, Berkeley, and others. And thanks to Medicare and insurance, I was able to run these incredible tests at little or no cost, so I made sure to give them to everybody. When the results came back, I could see exactly what foods were making a difference and which ones were not. One woman, Laura, was suffering from fatigue, weight gain, and joint aches all over her body. She also had terrible digestive discomfort and bloating. She'd been everywhere, and no one could help. Of course, as you can probably tell by now, she had all the signs of leaky gut. I told her what simple foods and harmful over-the-counter medicines to cut out, and which helpful supplements to add to her diet. We quickly healed the real cause of her problems, her leaky gut. With her gut lining repaired and toxins no longer sneaking into her body, the nerves in her joints stopped screaming for help because the high alert was over. She also lost a massive amount of weight. Her digestive issues went away, and she got back to being the healthy, happy, beautiful person she always knew she could be. Really, it's as simple as that. Well, after years of helping thousands of people just like Laura, I knew I was ready to present my findings to the world. In May of 2013, I presented the results of my multi-year study on the effect of repairing the gut wall on the flexibility of blood vessels to the American Heart Association, and the conference was stunned. My simple changes had created a 72% decrease in endothelial dysfunction, a precise way of looking at whether endotoxins were getting past the gut wall. The doctors were amazed. That's a massive, massive improvement in blood vessel function. Not only that, but I saw the markers for cardiovascular health improve in 100% of the participants. Yes, you heard that right. Every single person had experienced a massive health boost, and I had ironclad data to prove it. Well, I can tell you, after years of trying to get the attention of the medical community on the true causes of so many health problems, it was fantastic to finally be spreading the word. I've since been invited to speak at virtually every prestigious institution in the world. In fact, I was at Harvard this year, where I spoke to a room full of the nation's top doctors. Now, I mean no offense to these Ivy League guys. I went to Yale myself. But you would be amazed at how a room full of smart people can actually be so misinformed. You see, the speakers were discussing a very serious topic, brain health. And one of these researchers had discovered a link to a type of cell I told you about earlier, the glial cells in your brain. Because of my expertise on this subject, I'd been invited to speak as well. These researchers realized that when glial cells get activated, there's a direct correlation with the start of cognitive problems. And I was glad to hear that that was their finding, because it's totally true, as my own research had confirmed. But here's the thing. When I asked them what was causing these glial cells to go on high alert, not one of them had an answer. And even worse, they didn't care. Because the real purpose of this conference was to discover new drugs.
And we will end it right there, because it's still a pretty good amount to go in this video, and we have other things that we want to cover. But we have to pay attention to, we here, at least on Black Talk Radio Network, all of the hosts have talked about the fluoride and all of the pesticides that we deal with on a daily basis, and even some that's put in our food purposely to keep us sick. And like he just stated before I paused the video, they weren't there to find solutions or cures. They was there to find new drugs to be promoted. And he said a few things in this that pertains to the medical institutions and just history in general. One of the biggest things that I paid attention to that made me want to play this is that he let the people know who have these issues. It's not your fault. We have been miseducated on our diets. And that miseducation is something that we use, that they use to continue to infect us with all of these different diseases, which is why we continuously have to have new vaccines created for new problems that have been developed, which in turn creates more money. Now, before you start on what you was getting ready to start, Roz, did you want to say something about that video? Because I know we've covered this several times, but I think it's something that we need to continue to go over until none of us have any issues with our stomach.
Now, has he put out any information regarding the diet so other people can try it, or is it something he's monetized where you have to pay him and then he tells you what the diet is?
Oh, of course.
That's what I was wondering first.
Of course, it has been monetized, but
makes sense.
Here, you know, I went and pulled this up too, and these are just some of the foods to eat. And it's very similar to a Dr. Sebi diet. Like he stated, is he got away from the pills and the processed, quote unquote, medicines that's being used, and it got back to natural ingredients. All I see here is that black people have tend to become more holistic with our diets and preventive maintenance as a group, I say, because I still have challenges myself, but as a group, we have kind of shied away from the medicine. And what's going on now with him, even though he's throwing bits and pieces of the truth out there, the actual bottom line is that this is the new route to monetize pain. So what's happening is that, like me and you talk about, taking silver, taking turmeric, all of these natural herbs, they're just putting it in a position to where you would have, someone would believe they have to go to one of these white people to find this information. So I say all of that to begin to say this: foods to eat, vegetables, of course. And I'm gonna put this article in the real life thread as well. So those of you who want to go over this, you can check this out. But roots and tumblers, those will be your sweet potatoes, yams, carrots, turnips, turmeric.
Roots and tubers, that's a tuber too.
Fermented vegetables, fruits, sprouted seeds, gluten-free grains, healthy fats, meaning avocado oil, coconut oil, virgin oil. These are all fats that are good for you that you can ingest. Fish, and they made sure to specify salmon, tuna, herring, and other fish that are rich in omega-3s. And tilapia and catfish are not included in that, on that list. I used to love those. So I want to throw that out there. And here's some meats that they gave. Meats and eggs. It goes lean cuts of chicken, beef, lamb, turkey, and eggs. You know, and that some of that has been stripped away from the diet to the point to where you have vegetarians shaming people sometimes about eating meat. And it sounds funny, but it's true. To continue on the rest of this list, we got herbs and spices, cultured dairy products, and they put yogurt and traditional buttermilk. Beverages, bone broth, teas, coconut milk, nut milk, water, and kombuchas. I don't know if any of y'all ever had one of those, but it's a prebiotic.
Yeah. Probiotic tea.
Probiotic, yes. Yeah, sorry about that. Weird tasting beverage, but... Yeah. Anyhow, and the last thing on the list is raw nuts. So if you're not allergic to nuts, that's one of the things we should be ingesting to help with our GI issues. So that's a list of things that I've found. But as for the video, I played that because as bad as it is, we could say things all day long. But when the white guy said, people tend to listen a little bit closer. So hopefully this will push some of us who are having these issues to do more research outside of just the list that I gave. Roz?
Hey, what's up? I'm sorry. I missed what you said.
Oh, I was saying I just hope people who are having these issues with their guts, that they'll take this as a reason to investigate and be able to treat themselves. Because as he stated in the video, you don't need a doctor for this. You just need a diet change.
Yeah, the one thing that he had in that list that I wouldn't suggest is dairy products.
Well, that's not his list. This is just a list of recommended foods to eat if you're dealing with this issue.
Yeah, but the thing is, dairy tends to cause most people issues because the majority of the world is lactose intolerant. There's only small pockets of people across the world that are actually not lactose intolerant. And I know a good portion of them are in East Africa, where we talked about that. There was a there's a group in Kenya that drinks, all they live off of is cow's milk, and they also take blood from the cow periodically. That's what they eat every day, all day. They have no health problems, no nothing. I've seen documentaries on them. I believe it's the Maasai or one of the groups closely connected to the Maasai. And they have the cows that you see on the walls of Ethiopia and Sudan and Kemet, the ones with the real broad horns that look like giant U-shaped ones. Those are cows that date back to the times of the pharaohs and earlier. And those are the cows that they still have. And those, they pretty much venerate the cow. So they're direct descendants of the deity worship of Heru, and they drink cow's milk. But they're actually one of those groups that are not lactose intolerant. The majority of the African continent is lactose intolerant, so it's going to cause you stomach
issues. I'm lactose intolerant.
Yeah, so I mean, like, it's going to cause you stomach problems. I know I'm definitely lactose intolerant. I don't mess with dairy products whatsoever, and it's helped me tremendously. And I used to be a asthmatic as a child, and I still suffer from allergies, pollen-based allergies, and aerial toxin type allergies, and it improved a lot of that when I cut out the dairy stuff. So that's the one thing I wouldn't suggest, especially if you're black. It just wreaks havoc on our systems, and it throws your hormones completely out of balance because you're getting hormones from another mammal. So the same effect it would have on that cow's babies is going to have on you as an adult if you partake of it, or on your children if they take it when they're young. So yeah, that's the only thing I would say no to. But yeah, I mean, I understand. And also too, if you are a person who eats the meat that they mentioned, you just want to know what you're eating. You know what I mean? Like, I know where I live, we have a lot of the Dutch folks, and they don't deal with nothing but natural meat products.
Right.
That's just how they roll. Like, they don't deal with anything that's unnatural. They don't deal with it. So if, you know, I was to get, let's say, a smoked turkey from them, I know that turkey was raised, you know, out in the open, eating natural things turkeys eat. They're not giving them corn. They're not giving them GMO corn or any other crap, you know, meal that you see that they give to most other animals in other places. So it's about the quality of what you're getting. If you're gonna, you know, be a person that partakes of meat. And then there's certain fish you don't want to partake of. If you eat fish, you want to eat smaller fish. Bigger fish tend to be loaded with mercury and other toxins from the ocean. And you want to get fish that's caught on the Atlantic side, not the Pacific side, because you got Fukushima still leaking nuclear waste toxins into the Pacific. So you want to stay away from Pacific caught fish. You want to stay away from.
Are you
tilapia.
Serious?
Yo, can
yeah.
you? That's who is this? Greetings. Yeah. How are you doing?
This is Hayes. What's going on? You said years ago. I remember Fukushima blowing up. You just try to tell me it's still leaking into the ocean, and they not doing nothing about it. Really?
Yeah. Matter of fact, they even found radioactive isotopes in some of the wine coming out of California.
That was
just a few months ago. They were finding radioactive isotopes from Fukushima in the wine that they were making in California.
Yeah, it's seeping into
so
the
So it's definitely
dirt.
Still leaking. One of the things they were supposed to start doing was using hemp and cannabis to actually help clean up the spill, because they found that it actually is incredible at taking heavy metals, toxins, and radioactive waste out of the soil. I know that was one of the things. I posted an article about that a couple years back. But they're not doing whatever they're doing is not sufficient, because it's still leaking. They haven't stopped it, and it's really tainting everything on that western coast. You don't know what you might be partaking of. And like I said, just as recent as last year, they talked about finding the toxins in the wine, which means that it's in the grapes that they're using to make the wine.
That's crazy, because you would think a nation that got bombed twice, last thing they have on the island is a nuclear power plant, but it is what it is. But I didn't know it was still leaking into the ocean. That's some scary. That's scary right there. That's really scary.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I don't eat a lot of fish. I maybe some shrimp here and there, but you know, they still got the scary that golf shrimp. You remember the oil spill? That's still plaguing the market. So I'm kind of sketchy on the seafood.
Well, yeah, and you should be, because they mentioned tuna and salmon. But you got to remember that it was a there was a genetically modified salmon that was released also a few years back that was eating up the regular salmon. So which salmon are we talking about? But before we continue on, because I would love to hear some more of your input, Roz, I need you to hit the mute all button, unmute the gentleman afterwards, and that will that's why we open up the mics as we go.
Okay, give me 1 second.
Okay. Real quick.
Yeah, okay, we got, okay.
Hit us with the commercial break real quick. We're gonna go without the music and continue on with the show.
No problem. No problem, Mom. You are live on Real Life the Radio program with myself, Ross, and my co-host Jenna Keprock on Foundational Radio via Black Talk Radio Network. If you do wish to call in and either ask a question or make a comment, please feel free to give us a call at 719-284-5271, and the code is 70637. Again, that number is 719-284-5271, and the code is 70637. Thank you, and please watch your background noise when you call it, when you do call in. Thank you very much.
And is it *61 to open your mic up?
Yes, I believe it's *61. Okay. They usually give you a prompt, so they'll actually tell you what to press, but I've never had to do it, so I don't remember off the top, but I think that's what it is. I think it's *61.
I want to go back to the caller. Greetings. Today's episode is graduation time. Now, we're supposed to have the show Tuesday, as we have a show every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, but I got backed up dealing with a few different graduations, and hopefully anybody who went to a graduation didn't have no issues. You didn't bust up on Facebook or become one of these memes for ridiculousness that happens at some of these functions. But I wanted to ask Roz, and I will also ask the caller, is there any significance of why this has become a ceremony every year?
Really, everything that these people do here is really stolen traditions from everybody else. And I'm talking about Europeans specifically. Remember that Europeans did not know what taking the bath was until the Moors occupied Spain for almost 800 years. They didn't know what a university was until the Moors brought universities to Spain and Portugal in those areas. That was also a time. Whose phone is that?
Go ahead.
Okay. So these are things that were introduced to them by African people, and the Moors got a lot of their knowledge directly from Kemet. They were able to decipher the hieroglyphics long before Champollion did for the Europeans using the Rosetta Stone. So they took all of that knowledge, converted it into Arabic, and they took it with them when they went into Europe. So the whole concept of a ceremony and graduating children dates all the way back to the earliest schools on the continent, which dot along the Nile Valley. In Karnak, which is, I believe it's Warit, and Waset is Luxor. They used to hold 80,000 students at a time. That was considered the main school, and you had what they call subordinate lodges, because lodges were not actually what Masons make it out to be. They were actually educational institutions. You'll read about that if you read Stolen Legacy. And they had subordinate lodges all around the world. So if you were not able to travel to Kemet to go to school, you could go to one of the subordinate lodges, whether it was in the Levant area, in Europe, in the Americas. They had schools all over the world, but the main one was in in Karnak and Luxor, those were where the main ones were. And they had up to 80,000 students on the campus, no shootings, no killings, none of that. And also remember that the educational system was a 40-year educational system. So the most learned student was the one who started at age 7. That's when they put you into the school, and you stayed until you were 47. And that's when you would graduate, and you would graduate with multiple quote-unquote degrees or mastering multiple subjects. So you weren't practicing something. You mastered it before they put you out in the world to practice it or to do it on other people or whatever the case may be. So this ceremony dates back then. And remember that, well, most don't know, when you see the black jackal known as Anubis, Anpu, and Nipu, that particular deity was the judge of the dead. So when you see the professors wearing black, they're basically playing the role of the Nipu, and they are guiding, just like they guide the dead, they're guiding the living from going to a learning position into a learned master going into the world now. So they're literally doing what Anubis or Anipu was known to do, which is open paths and doors and roads. Mm. He's the equivalent to Eshu in the Orisha tradition of the Ifa people in the Yoruba people who practice the Ifa religion.
So it's a rites of passage, in other words.
It's a rites of passage, absolutely. So they're basically playing the role that the black jackal dog would play in opening these children, now adults, passing doors and roads to the rest of their life. Hmm. And hopefully they've given them the tools that they need to navigate the rest of their life successfully based on whatever subject they choose to take on as their particular contribution to society moving forward. So that is what that ceremony actually does. The difference is what it tells us is that some white person says, I ordain you to have this, you know, that you have this piece of paper saying that we said you learned what we told you you needed to do to master this subject. But ultimately, that's what the ceremony is.
Sir, did you have a question or comment? If not, could you mute your mic? We can hear everything on your end. And that'll keep me from having to mute you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think it is a rite of passage. I mean, I didn't have a big graduation party or nothing like that, but I went to those. And but now they're more problematic. And now with these cameras, everybody and their mama got a camera now. So you got to watch what you do, because you will be on Facebook, and that can go double ways. It can go for good, but a lot in our community is going for bad. Ratchet. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what the hell ratchet is. I know what a ratchet is and a tool. What is that? We make up stuff like that. That's why I really don't have a lot of time for ignorance and stuff. They just make up names and stuff. This new generation, mm-hmm. I come from the generation that knows how to wear a belt, okay? Because I come from that generation where I know sagging is sagging. I know where sagging came from, where it originated from, what it really means. And I don't know where the hell it got twisted as a fashion statement. So, it came from prison. It came from prison. Yeah. And they don't know what they're promoting. But for some reason, just like how our people we've taken nigger and we're trying to make it a badge of honor and everything like that. Now, yeah, I'm guilty. I say that, but I do not use that word around pink people or any other kind of non-ADOS people. I don't even use it around African people, because we know the African people that are in this country are pretty much on white supremacy side. So amongst my friends, yes, never in a highly public place. So there, I come from a place where I do know a place where and when to use that. But I don't like seeing it used, and I don't think it's a badge of honor. You know, just like I don't think this sagging is a badge of honor. When I had my store, you know, the typical thing, no shoes, no shirts, no service, no sagging. You come up to my store sagging and stuff, I'm not selling you a damn thing. Now, you can go outside, you can pull your belt up, come in here like a man, and I will sell you any type of paraphernalia product, like how you came up in here, but you're going to respect my store. respect yourself first, but you're going to respect my store. That's all I have to say.
That's so many ways to address that statement. First off, you coming from an age of wearing belts that would put you, I believe, a little bit older than me. I'm 38.
So I'm 47.
Okay, so we got you back about 10 years. Okay. I'm wondering, and this is no knock to you whatsoever, but I am wondering, when you run into these young men and a lot of times older men, some men your age that you run across doing these same type of actions as far as appearance, do they all come from the same place? Are we talking about drug infested areas? Are we talking about suburban areas where people are pretending to be from a drug infested area? Like, what type of people are we talking about right now?
Well, I was born and raised in Detroit, but I stay in Ann Arbor. So we're talking about suburbs. We're talking about perpetrators.
Okay.
Because if you take any of these Ypsilanti, I'm not even going to call them a gangster, it's a wannabe, and you take them down there across 8 Mile where I was from, they'll get eaten up. They'll get eaten up. And yeah, I had a couple of gentlemen my age come into my store, and they too, well, first, I had to shame them first. It was like, you're a little too young to be dressing like that. Pull your pants up, you know? And I just made a spectacle out of himself. I made him look. And that, how silly he looked. One, you're dressing like kid and play, and really that style is out, so you look like a fool. The little girl that you're with and stuff's probably screwing your brother and stuff, because one, you said, I thought it was his daughter. He made it sure it was not his daughter, but this girl, fresh out of high school, let's put it like that, just tacky. So we're talking about affluent blacks. We're talking about bottom of the basement, if you want to call it, ghetto blacks. Then we're talking about wigger whites, too. You know what a wigger is? A wigger is, if Stevie Wonder ran into Eminem, he thought he was black. Because how Eminem talk, I've heard Eminem talk, and he sounds black. That's a wigger. That's what we have here in the Ann Arbor area. Mind you, I have 3 colleges here. I have the University of Michigan. I have Eastern Michigan University, and I have the college that my grandfather taught at, Washtenaw Community College. Oh, excuse me. We have Concordia College, too. That's like a Christian, they bong gongs and stuff like that. I've never seen no niggas there, but anyway, we got 4. So that's the kind of people that I'm dealing with.
Okay. Piece of advice, unsolicited. When you're dealing with these people, and I'm familiar with Detroit. One of my best friends is from Detroit, Michigan State graduate. I don't want to say compare, but we talk about the different systems that go on in these different regions of America. One of the things that I find that a lot of older gentlemen do is that, like you say, they try to shame people into doing things. What I have found in my experiences is that shaming normally creates animosity more so than respect. So when you do shame these people, whether it's they're your age or older, I would love to know, what is that response that you receive, and is there anything that you could think of that would be a better way of communicating with these less fortunate people that's coming into your store?
Well, I mean, I don't shame them to make them feel bad. I've had only one incident where it could have went both ways. It could have went, you know, the gunplay or anything like that. But the funny thing came out that the young man and stuff went to school, you know, with somebody that I went to school with. So it boiled down to, but the older gentleman,
right?
He knew he was wrong. He knew he was wrong, and he pulled his pants up. And to this day, now that was what, 2010. To this day, I still see this gentleman walking around the area with his pants up. So certain shaming in certain conditions do work. I don't shame my people around white people. But frankly, if they come into my store one at a time, it's easier to deal with than if I got a couple pinkies up in there and stuff, I'll let the pinkies go first, then I'll address the issue. I know what you want to buy, but you got to hear what I have to say. There is a certain issue that I need to address. They listen because I don't come across them as scolding them. Mm. I come at them with a certain level of a knowledge. You know, I don't coddle them, but I don't beat them down and browbeat them. That's not right.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to ask you them questions, and I appreciate you explaining that, because that's a big issue that we have in our community. As far as, like you were saying, if you hadn't explained that, all we would have came away with is that, well, yeah, they probably should have been done. They probably should have had their pants up and was bringing respect to him, but he didn't have to talk to him like that. So that explanation was very much appreciated. You're more than welcome to stay here, but we got to move on with the show. Brother Rise, I have a few more that I want to get into, and I'm gonna just throw these out real quick. I'm not gonna read them. I'm just gonna go over a few. One of them, I look like I done took some down by mistake, because I know we're gonna get right back into this spirituality, and it's gonna have a lot to do with what the brother from Ann Arbor was talking about and how we should be communicating with each other. But before we get into that, I want to get into the point. Here we have a link, and this comes from my local news Channel 9 in Chattanooga. Washington State to be the first state to allow compost from human bodies, meaning that when you die, whether you're murdered or you have died from quote-unquote natural causes, then you will be allowed to become compost, which will in turn wind up in somebody's garden, and you have now become accountable. Just the way my mind
works. Without your consent?
Without your consent or knowledge. So I want to go into all of these things are located in BTR Communities website up under Real Life the Radio Show. This next one I want to go, it comes from, what is the name of this? The Epoch Times. Excuse me if I'm saying that right. And this is a South African doctor cures deafness with first ever middle ear transplant using 3D technology. So he has printed a hearing aid small enough that can stay in your ear indefinitely. Now, if that gets any play over here and begins to get sold, I'm not sure, considering, like we just know, the medical industry is in it to have you to come back. So that's something interesting that I think everybody should know something about, because we're losing our hearing day by day. This right here also comes from a local radio station, News Channel 3, and this is an update. U.S. fighters intercept Russian bombers flying near Alaska for the second day in a row. Now, while we're hearing about the press conference that, what's the black guy name? I can't even think of it. Ben Carson messing up, talking about Oreo for the REO and all of this. We're having an actual confrontation that's not being discussed. Dave Tando Radio always speaks on this, but it has finally become national news, and it's not getting a lot of play, but it is national news. So pay attention to that. We also have the trade war that's going on with China. Now, as we all know, tariffs are not paid by governments. They're paid by citizens. And if you pay attention to everything that's in your home, a significant amount of those items that you have come from China. Now, whether you're upgrading, replacing, or you just treating yourself, this is going to directly affect you in a major way. So pay attention to that. This last news article I want to get into before me and Rod start discussing this spiritualness is this comes from News One. Racist robocall defends white woman who killed a black man in Georgia. Negroes aren't American. Now, I don't share this because I think it's something that we need to know about, because we already know this is that this is happening. The reason I share this is because big companies are getting behind these races, and they're making it publicly known also. So pay attention to these small details that are coming in and day out, that most of the time we are either too tired from working, taking care of children, or frustrated from our partners, whatever the issue is. We have certain things that are being bombarded in our direction that make no sense whatsoever. And we have these sprinkles of truth that we normally pay no attention to. So with that said, I'm a fall back off of this, Rise, and let me know where you want to start.
All right, my computer is actually freezing crazy, so I'm going to have to take a look at this on my phone, because there was let's see something real quick.
Well, I know you it had, well, while you getting that together,
passed
Malcolm X's birthday, and we, I think this would be a perfect time while you're trying to get that together to play this clip.
Okay, then I think I know which one it is. That.
Consistent girls in the United States, but they don't realize that two-thirds of Brazil consists of people of African blood, which means they're also Afro-American, because Brazil is in South America. And in all of these, many of these countries in South America and Central America, and even in Canada, they are heavily populated with people whose ancestors came from Africa. So when you total up the number of Afro-Americans, real Afro-Americans, in the Western Hemisphere, there are perhaps 100 million. And if these people ever unite among themselves, not only is it necessary for the Afro-Americans in the United States to be organized, but it's also necessary for the Afro-Americans in the Caribbean, or the Afro-Cubans, the Afro-Brazilians. It's necessary for all of them to be organized. And then once they are organized in each place, we have to organize among ourselves, so that the Afro-American in the United States will be working in conjunction in a coordinated program with those who are in Cuba and those in Brazil and those in Venezuela and those throughout the Caribbean and Haiti and in the West Indian Islands. And in this way, we actually get strength. And it's not an accident that there's no organization existing in the Western Hemisphere that's designed toward that end. It would be a direct threat to imperialism as it really exists, and to colonialism as it exists in the West. And one of the things that's going to help to bring this about is the independence of Africa. And one of the only reasons that we in the West have never organized, we have hated our image and our African image. And because Africa has been in the hands of people who have created an image of Africa that's negative and hateful, and it has been hateful to us. We haven't wanted to identify with it. But now that Africa is getting independent and in a position to create its own image, and it's a positive image, those of us in the West look at the African image and see how positive it is. We begin to identify with it. We become proud of Africa, and we become proud of our African blood, our African heritage. And this is what is beginning to make the Africans in the Western Hemisphere today develop more race pride. And as this race pride develops, then it has a tendency to make us want to unite together and work together. And your Western imperialists and colonialists consider this to be a grave threat. More threat than communism or Marxism or socialism or anything else. The Africanism is what they consider to be the real threat.
And what is the actual situation in the United States, where over 20 million colored people virtually live as a colonized nation under racist and economic oppression?
Well, for the past 10 years, the struggle in America has been confined to what has been projected to the public as a civil rights struggle. And in that context, it has remained a domestic problem. It has remained within the jurisdiction of the United States. And it has, and as such, it has been impossible for the Afro-Americans or American Negroes to try and enlist the support of other dark-skinned people who are being oppressed the world over in that struggle. And the difference now in the direction that the struggle is taking from the direction that the struggle has been going in the past, there are many of our people who are thinking more deeply and more broadly and are beginning to see the importance of lifting it out of the national context or out of the domestic context or beyond the jurisdiction of the United States government. And the only way this can be done is by internationalizing the problem and putting it at a level where it can be taken into the United Nations. And then all of the other independent nations on this earth can involve themselves in our struggle and support us. And the only way by which this can be done, instead of it being called civil rights in the future, we're going to have to label it a human rights struggle or the struggle for human rights. And as such, we can then take it into the United Nations through the avenues that have been set up by the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. We can take our problem before the United Nations in the same manner that the problem of South Africa, Angola, Mozambique, Hungary, the Arab refugee problem, it becomes a world problem. And as a world problem, then the Afro-American or the so-called Negroes equal results because it's not left up to the one who's responsible for it anymore, but it's put at a level where the whole can see that our plight is wrong. It stood in our path in the past. It also makes a difference in the leadership. Those who have been posing as leaders of our people in America in the past, they can pose on this local stage where Uncle Sam is the master of the show and can prop them up and make them look good or make them look better than they actually are by giving them token gains and building them up an image. But when they step onto the international stage or the world stage, then Uncle Sam can't prop them up anymore. And their ability or lack of ability becomes exposed. And if they can lead us forward, they remain leaders. But if they can't, then they have to step aside and more qualified and bona fide leaders step up from the masses of our people, and then we get faster progress. We get more results.
Malcolm X came from the masses as a genuine leader of his people. He was well aware of the false divisions planted between them, for he himself had overcome many of these artificial barriers to emerge as a voice which raised our strongest demands for freedom and justice in America. This man combined his recognition of the chief enemy of the African and Afro-American people with an objective knowledge of where our strength lay. He talks about the black intellectual, he talks about education, revolutionary education, he talks about the tasks of our women.
Well, in the past, the Afro-American or American Negro intellectual permitted himself to be used in a way that wasn't really beneficial to the overall Afro-American struggle. But I think today that these intellectuals have begun to undertake a new appraisal of the problem, looking at it as it actually is, and are beginning to see it more in the international context and the relation that it has with the African struggle. And the African intellectual is beginning to look at the problem in the African context and see that what might be good in one country, in order for it to be used in another country, has to be rearranged. You take African socialism. Many of the African intellectuals that have analyzed the approach of socialism are beginning to see where the African has to use a form of socialism that's that fits into the African context, whereas the form that is used in a European country might be good for that particular European country. It doesn't fit as well into the African context. So I think the African intellectual is making that contribution, and he's making it well. One thing that I became aware of in my traveling recently through Africa and the Middle East, in every country that you go to, usually the degree of progress can never be separated from the woman. If you're in a country that's progressive, the woman is progressive. If you're in a country that reflects a consciousness toward the importance of education, it's because the woman is aware of the importance of education. But in every backward country, you'll find the women are backward. And in every country where education is not stressed, it's because the women don't have education. So one of the things I became thoroughly convinced of in my recent travels is the importance of giving freedom to the woman, giving her education, and giving her the incentive to get out there and put that same spirit and understanding in the children. And I frankly am proud of the contribution that our women have made in the struggle for freedom. And I'm one person who's for giving them all of the leeway possible because they've made a greater contribution than many of us men. And one of the best ways that they can help is to encourage the man, try and inspire him to be more militant and turn him away from being nonviolent and passive and meek and Uncle Tomish. Make him aware that the black woman wants to see her man be a man instead of around here using religion as an excuse to be a coward and some of the things that he's been reflecting here lately. The organization of Afro-American Unity sees the only hope for the black man in America in a strong Africa. And the necessity of the Afro-American becoming inseparably linked with the overall program that's existing on the African continent. The two problems must be solved together, and the two forces must go forward together. And so the Organization of Afro-American Unity has a program to link the Afro-Americans with the Africans and the Africans with the Afro-Americans. When I say Afro-Americans, I mean those throughout the entire Western Hemisphere. This is our only hope. Our hope is in a strong Africa. And when Africa is strong, our position in America will be one of respect. But if Africa is weak, we will never be in a position of respect in America.
Man. May his spirit continue to rage on throughout all of us.
And what's funny is because I remember part of what he was saying when he said that as Africa becomes more powerful, blacks in America will experience a difference in their treatment. He directly linked it to China. And he talked about when he was younger, they used to have all of these sayings about Chinese people that were pretty much racial stereotypes or racist sayings, like you didn't have a Chinaman's chance and, you know, calling people chinks and making all those kind of sly comments that we grow up hearing about if you're old enough. And he said that, you know, as China started to become more powerful, their people in other parts of the world were treated differently and with a different level of respect because now their country is in a powerful position and they play that powerful position and it trickles down to even their citizens who reside in other parts of the world. And you see it today with China. Look at what happened with the chick from Huawei. When Canada put her in jail on the behest of the U.S. government, the Chinese took two of their people and put them in jail. And then within 24 hours, she was released from the Canadian jail. So he said that as the continent becomes more powerful, that black people in other parts of the world will experience that effect of, okay, black people are not taking it. And plus, it's because he was talking about linking the two groups. What has happened in the last since Minister Malcolm has died, because if you read a book called The Judas Factor, The Plot to Kill Malcolm X, you'll see that that's when he became the most horrifically terrifying to this government, was when he started linking with Africa. It was after that trip. And when he started linking, not just with African folks, he got the people in the Caribbean, black leaders in South America, Asian leaders, all of them to come together. And they were about to take the United States and European powers to court for human rights abuses against all of these different countries that have been colonized by these different European powers. And they could not have him do that. But that only came from unity and respect and understanding each other's history. Now, everything that I've heard American Africans say about Africans on the continent and Africans say about American Africans, we both do the same thing. The biggest detriment to the upward mobility of Black people in the Americas were other Black Americans who were in political positions. That's why, that's one of the major reasons that certain things haven't been addressed.
Hold on a second.
You have gatekeeper Black people who've been in the same positions for a decade.
Hold on a second, Roz. Repeat that last part one more time, please.
Oh, I was saying that the biggest detriment to American Africans' upward mobility in this country have been gatekeeper American Africans. And that's with every group. So it's not a dig on Black people here, because in the Caribbean, it's the same thing. On the African continent, it's the same thing. Even with other non-white groups, it's the same thing. You cannot be subjugated without the direct cooperation of the people you are subjugated. That happened with the Native Americans. That happened with the Africans on the continent. The only people who are blamed for their own enslavement are Africans. You never hear, Japanese being blamed for their own internment in concentration camps. You don't hear Native Americans being blamed for being behind the white takeover of the Americas, but that is a fact. They work hand in hand with white people to dominate other Native American groups and wipe some of those groups out. So that's just fact. So and that's with every group. So this xenophobic attitude has developed since Minister Malcolm died. And it is something where you see a line of demarcation where in the late 60s into the early 70s, Black people had a different understanding of things. And like you said, during that time, these countries were becoming independent. Black people globally didn't understand the concept of neocolonialism at that point. So they thought when these Europeans were giving back these countries to these indigenous Africans that, oh yeah, Black people running stuff. So you see it in the mindset of the people here. In the expressions with the Afros, and everybody was really, really trying to coalesce around problem solving. The Black Panthers came up and they got a lot of their thoughts and ideologies from Malcolm X. They made that clear with a lot of the things he talked about that helped them develop in the direction and the mode in which they did. And these are the things, there was a cohesiveness there that is completely missing today. Oh, you are now live on Real Life the Radio Show with myself, Roz, and my co-host, Linda Kebra, on Foundational Radio via Black Talk Radio Network. If you wish to call in and make a comment or ask a question, please give us a call at 719-284-5271, and the code is 70637. Again, that's 719-284-5271, and the code is 70637. Press star 61 if you wish to ask a question or make a comment.
Thursday afternoon, and I'm sure that our caller today, I would really love to hear his stand, because I heard him mention earlier that he's with the ADOS, which I believe we all are, but you know, everyone has their own definitions. So before you continue on, Roz, I know we done got way away from the spiritual aspect of what we were supposed to be doing today.
Yeah.
But, you know, it happens. So, further ado, and Carla, could you give us your name and where you're from one more time? I seem to misplace your name.
I'm Head.
Head?
Going by Head. My channel's name is The Haze of Our Lives on Black Junction TV. From Ann Arbor. Well, I come from Detroit, but I reside in Ann Arbor.
Okay.
Nice. And it's this is a brother I've been in communication with on Black Junction for a while. He's a sharp brother. He has his own business. So definitely please support Paraphernalia Palace. Please support him on Black Junction. And there's just if you really study our history, both on the continent and here, it was always those leaders who were talking about unification with other Black people who disappeared. So that is the main reason why Pan-Africanism never really had a chance to do anything. This is the first time in its history, which dates back many thousands of years. It wasn't created in the Western Hemisphere. There's a long intergenerational history of a Pan-African consciousness on the continent long before it was resurrected in the Western Hemisphere. And we talked about that in earlier shows before. Now, the thing is that it was always those leaders who talked about unification and the upper mobility of all Black people that were gunned down, disappeared, you never heard from them again, where they completely defamed their character and put them in prison for some trumped up charge and then eventually deported them in the case of Marcus Garvey. So what I see today is that they've been so successful at creating a rift between these different groups that when you go back just a few decades, it wasn't like that. You know, I remember Dr. Ben going, sitting at his feet, Dr. Clark's feet, and all of those giants as a child, and them talking about how there was a rift between incoming Caribbean groups and African groups and American Africans, specifically in New York. And that as they started to get to know each other's cultures and intermingle, and this is all during the Renaissance period, moving up into when I was a child, you know, Dr. Ben used to laughingly say, you know, you started to see the beauty in the other people. In other words, sex would take place. And then you had these children that were born of either one American parent and one foreign parent, vice versa. And a lot of those issues started to disappear. So something happened where our enemies were able to successfully put us in this position, because ultimately there's not a Black person in this country who does not help white supremacy. If you pay your taxes, you help in white supremacy. I don't care if you're an immigrant or a native-born Black person. If you stop when you see the red, white, and blue lights behind you, you are kowtowing to white supremacy every time. If, like, we all do it. And like I said, I think that the blame game is just, it reminds me of what the white people in the North were told when Blacks started their great migration. There were two of them. But each time they migrated from South to North trying to get away from white terrorism, racist terrorism in the South, white people were told, these Negroes are coming up north taking your jobs and you need to get rid of them. So you had these mass riots and lynchings all across cities like Detroit, New York City, all across those northern cities. You had that same xenophobic response. Then we played the clip a few shows ago where you had the people. These were actually dark-skinned Black people and some mixed-race Black people that they had interviewed. I think it was ABC. You can listen to the old show. I can't remember exactly which one, but it wasn't too long ago. They were one of the first migrants of the Great Migration. They got settled here. They were living close to and in some cases around white people, and they were living good lives, making good money. They were educated, and they were upset with the new wave of Black people that were coming up and did not want them up there. And they said they weren't like us. They don't speak like us. Their behaviors aren't like us. They're not in the same socioeconomic status. This is Black people talking about other Black people. And they were upset with them moving up because they were moving from the South. These people were usually uneducated. They worked on farms, things like that. So they felt that this false perception that they created amongst the Northern whites would be tarnished by having more Black people coming up from the South.
Well,
and these were Black people saying it. It was crazy to me.
Well, we have to remember, though, Roz, is that all of those was those were the initial reasons, but the real reason they was upset is because of the culture shock. They said specifically that they remember going to visit where they were from and couldn't stand the culture that they had. They couldn't wait to get back to their culture, and that with this migration, there was going to be that Southern culture was going to follow, and that's what they didn't want. So that's what they... that's what they put between themselves to show that they were different, was the culture.
Right. But what it was for them was that it was a reminder of what they came from and what they used to be. And in their minds, they had changed so much by getting the education and making better money and being able to live in and amongst white folks, because they were making the money to do so, that they created this image So to have the image of what they once were coming back up to look at them, and like you said, bring that culture with them, it's going to stain them in the eyes of the people who they gave this false perception to, because they, you know, they spoke better English and they had an education and they were making good money. So it's a psychology thing. And I think the same psychology applies to those people from the continent or any place else that come to America with judgmental attitudes towards native born blacks, and the same thing with native born blacks with those sorts of attitudes against other black people. And again, it's that we're all connected to the same people who have done the same things to all of us. And we all have a common heritage. So the idea is that for us to be not able to make the connections that Malcolm was able to make before he died, sadly, a lot of those things died with him because he wasn't able to really fully organize everything the way he wanted it so that it could self-perpetuate if anything happened to him. But the truth is, you can hear it from his own mouth, what he intended. And if you read that book, which is probably the best book ever written on what happened to Malcolm X, if you watch the videos from Zach Kondo and Omar Shabazz, has a bunch of great videos that break down what actually happened to Malcolm with the people who were directly involved, as well as the government conspiracy behind what happened to him, you'll see that that's what it was. That's really what it was. And if we don't get past those kinds of things, because you're going to always have people who come from other groups that do negative things, we all do. But for us to blanket an entire group of people, especially those who look like us, is crazy to me. And especially when we have more than enough cases of police killing foreign blacks because they were niggas to them. They didn't say, oh, this guy's from Somalia, or this guy's from Trinidad, or this guy's from Haiti or something. They was just niggas to them. And then you found out later, you know, Amadou Diallo was West African, or Abner Louima was from Haiti. But when the cops did what they did, they didn't hear no accent. They didn't hear, oh, you foreign. They just saw a black person and did what they do to black people here.
All right. So, I have a few questions for our caller, because as earlier, here's one of the things that I've wanted to, every time I ask the person who knows about the ADOS and the reparations movement that's going on, I always let them know first and foremost, I am under the definition of what most people have, I am a ADOS, but I am also African. I recognize both. My question to you is that, has there been any specifics on what determines if you're an American descendant of slavery? Because I haven't found that other than hearsay. And if there isn't one, what would be your personal definition? And as Malcolm stated, just having a little bit of geographical knowledge, we would also, should we include the Caribbean and all of those others, whether we're talking about Cuba, Puerto Rico, in the southern United States, because I'm not southern United States, southern America, South America, all of those are the Americas. But I always know they get separated. So I would like to know what your thoughts on that is.
That should be just like how they say, one drop of black blood. Okay, let's adopt that. Now, one of your parents are ADOS, and they do marry a Caribbean or an African. Yes, they are. They are ADOS. I mean, there's no way around it. Look at Nipsey Hussle. Look at Nipsey Hussle. His mom is ADOS, and his dad was from Ethiopia. And, you know, I'll rock with Nipsey. Now, you know, that was a young man. He died 33. He's young. But what he was talking about was all true. He got out of that ignorant thing. And he was teaching the youth how to do computers, stocks, another thing that our people really need to get into, and how to buy back the block. Because, see, I have a problem here in Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti area, we're obtaining a real storefront because all these Arabs have bought up all these properties with the help of their gas stations, their video shops, their cell phone shops, and whatnot. Got to thank Reagan for that. But, yes, I think if one of their parents is proven to be born here and ADOS, of course, it would be silly to say otherwise.
Okay. Look, thank you for that. I have one more question, and it would let me figure out how I'm gonna formulate this question. We're gonna separate the different places, right? Is just a Caribbean family an American descendant of slavery?
No, no, because they didn't go through what my grandparents and her parents and my grandfather and his parents went through. No. Are you talking about they're fresh off the boat, just getting over here? They were born in Barbados or whatever, like Rihanna? No, you get nothing. When the reparations come, you get nothing. Now, if that's just too brash, hey, I got a disclaimer on my channel. There is nothing wrong with me. I am just a product of my racist environment.
Oh, I don't, I have no problem with your answer. That's your answer. But this goes back to where I find confusion. We do recognize that those places are in the Americas. We do recognize that, right?
Well, they're in the Americas, but part of the Americas are still ran by the British. They're not all in the Americas. So they might be in our hemisphere, yeah, but they're not all ran or territorial by us. The Queen has her hand in a lot of stuff. Like, I mean, so what? Not the Cayman Islands, the Bermuda Islands. That's not all ours.
Now, when you say ours, yeah. are we talking about the United States in particular?
The United States. It's not the United States territories, which they probably stole or, you know, something like that. They gobbled up. But it's like Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is all ours. But, you know, they don't, they're not getting the help that they're supposed to be getting. But we claim it. We say that's ours. Those people can come and go as they please. Some of those people in the Bermuda Islands on the British side, they cannot come to the United States freely as Puerto Ricans can, or on the people on the other side of the territories that the United States do own can come and go as freely as they want without any type of custom check or anything like that.
Right. I agree. We're talking about the country affiliates and what have you, who governs that country. I agree. As far as the British still run the United States also. But I understand what you're saying as far as you talking about the government and who's the money coming from. And I'm not disagreeing with you on any of this. What my opinions are on this is they don't even matter. I was just wanting to know, because here on this program, we have never had anyone to explain exactly the viewpoint that they're coming from. It normally changes, and I appreciate you for being steadfast on how you feel. It just gives us, well, excuse me, let me not say that. It gives me the perspective that you're coming from. So with that being said, Ryz, you have any questions? Because I know we're getting at the bottom, and I would like to thank you for participating with us today ahead.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you for allowing me to participate.
No worries.
Yeah, it's great. It's great having you, because it's pretty simple logic. You know, those places who have been colonized by whoever colonized them, those are the people who those native inhabitants need to sue for their reparations. So it's just straight common sense in regards to that. What I think is that we also need to work towards breaking those barriers. And I mean, there's tons of things happening on the African continent to do just that. There's tons of things happening over here that is doing just that, where there's people in the United States, continental United States, making direct connections with people on the African continent to work towards getting things done. And this is the first time in our history that this has happened. Because, like I said, every attempt towards any sort of Pan-African movement where we all are trying to free ourselves of the same tyranny and instate a global consciousness regarding the psychopathology of our colonizers has been completely annihilated. So this is the first time that it's happening. It's slow. This is the very beginning stages, but things are happening to let you know that there's a major shift happening. And the only way that it's going to continue to grow is for us to be able to communicate with each other and really look at things in their proper context. And the things that are happening are directly tied to the legacy of what Malcolm just talked about that he actually did. A lot of those things are directly linked to the work that he did before. It's just that people are starting to see the bigger picture. And I always tell Black people, whatever white people don't want you doing is exactly what you're supposed to be doing. And what they don't want you doing is making connections with other Black people, both where you live at. They want you fighting amongst yourselves, and they want you fighting other Black people in other parts of the world, too.
Facts.
And that means that you should be doing the complete reverse of that. And all of the greatest of our people, both here, the Caribbean, South America, Spanish-speaking, Black people, the continent, all the greatest of them all said the same thing, that we need to come together. And it doesn't mean everybody's gonna unite. I'm not that stupid to believe that. Some people are just too far gone, and that's just something we have to accept. But the idea is that if we can get a critical mass, that's all it takes, is a critical mass to say we're not having this no more, and we're creating something different where we don't even have to have any economic ties to white countries whatsoever. We're going to completely do all of our buying and selling amongst ourselves globally. And we set up the imports and make the proper connections to get those imports and exports going. And we start building our own products that are superior to their products. This is all stuff that can happen. And this is stuff that is slowly starting to take off. And, a lot of things will change. That's what Gaddafi had in mind. That's why they offed him, too.
You know,
go ahead, what you saying?
That's right.
It's always a start with the, it always starts with the conversation. You know, being able to disagree is one of the first steps. We're here at the end of the show, and we should go on longer, but I have other things I have to do. So what I want to do right now is the Brotherhood. Let the people know about the show, because I've heard you mention your show. Let the people know about your show, where they can find you at. And once again, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Absolutely.
Brother Ross, when he gets done, hit us with the prayer and take us out of here, man.
No problem.
Well, I'm on Black Junction TV. My channel is called The Haze of Our Lies. X is in parentheses. I have a shop on eBay called Paraphernalia Palace, and I'm just I'm a middle-aged Black man trying to do the right thing. That I was swept up in the mass incarceration thing with the cooning for capital. Y'all need to put that on your topics one day. I got a lot of coons in my family, and it just took $2,800 for a cooning for a capital uncle to send me to prison. And send his own son. That's a problem in our community, where these police departments are allowing this type of activity to happen. But he sent his own son to the Fed joint. Now, you're never the same once you come out of prison.
Hey,
nothing violent. Yeah.
I'm sorry, sir. Can you, first time ever hearing that term, can you tell me what cooning for capital is?
Cooning for capital? Oh, cooning for capital is any Black person that will work for Zaddy, white supremacist, or the police for any type of monetary reward to send one of their own away.
Mandatory manumission.
You see a lot of cooning for capital. Like on the Today Show, you see all the Black anchors, they got to coon for that capital, don't they? They got to pay those bills, right? It's not just in the ghetto where we find this stuff. You got affluent people that have to coon for capital. My grandfather built this house with a GI Bill because he fought in Korea. And he told me it's going to come to a point, and we're at the point now, where you are not going to be able to obtain the house that I'm going to inherit, because you're not going to be able to sustain a lifestyle to buy this house unless you coon for capital. And all these Negroes in my neighborhood now, because the older Negroes that bought when my grandfather bought, they have died off. They are the ace of the coons, never to be trusted. That's what a coon for capital means.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, my girl wants her phone back, so I'm going to have to sign off. But I'm definitely going to let everybody know about your channel. I love the show. I love it. And, Roz, I'm going to talk to you later, all right?
All right. You take care. You have a good one. And take care of yourself, too. Let me know how the stuff helps with your headache.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I got a jar of CBD from the dispensary yesterday. And, I'm going to take care of those headaches, man, because I can't let them, just beat me down on that. I know my motor skills are messed up because of the blows of the baton, but I'm still here.
I'm glad you're here. I'll continue to look into that.
And I'll call in again, all right?
All right.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it.
All right.
All right. Peace and love.
Peace and love. Thank you. Going to take us on out, Rise. And yes, this was interesting.
Yes. It, very interesting. So this the conversation we didn't get to have is to be continued, as you know. But this one was one that had to happen. It was really good, and I really, really am thankful for Brother Hess for calling in, and please support his business. And we're gonna get ready to close out. This was a really, really good one. Surprise, but a welcome and positive surprise for sure. So thanks everyone for being with us this Wednesday afternoon. I know it's not our normal scheduled time.
It's Thursday.
Wasn't a normal scheduled conversation, but sometimes these conversations, the ancestors say this is a conversation you need to have. So, hey, it's worked out wonderfully. I appreciate all the callers and listeners. What are you going to say, Jenna?
It's Thursday.
Yes, Thursday. My bad. Yep, Thursday the 23rd of May. Thanks for being with us this Thursday, the 23rd of May. We greatly appreciate you. We hope that you all stay safe, stay out of the hands of those slave catchers. Minimize contact and minimize conflict with other Black people, and just keep your eyes on the prize. Keep your eyes on whatever goal it is that you set before yourself, and make that your ultimate focus. Let nothing deter you from that, whatever that may be for you personally. I wish each and every one of you the ability to obtain whatever you need the most, and please get prepared for what's coming. They're going to collapse this economy, and it's going to be something that has never been seen in human history. And it's going to affect people globally, not just in the United States, but the United States will be the hardest hit from it. So please prepare. Do the things that we've talked about on Tando and that we talk about here to prepare yourself for what's coming. With that being said, we're going to say the prayer and close out the show. We wish you all to stay safe and stay happy and healthy until next week, Tuesday, when we talk to you again. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest level of Black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice ASAP, and let's end prison industrial complex as well as human trafficking. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I am one with the all, and the all is one with me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is I am. The all can I can. The all does I do. Thanks again for spending your Thursday afternoon with us. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next week, Tuesday. Creator willing. Peace and love. One love. And stay safe.
Peace and love.
Up to your expectations. passions, neither are you here to live up to mine. Yeah. I don't owe no one, no obligation. No, I don't mean none, so everything is fine. Fine. I said, I am that I am. I am, I am. Character.